The following program contains heavy spoilers, deep insight, and absolutely no filters. Listener discretion is advised. Snobs on Film. My name is Arthur, your host, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Isaac and Jahan. Avengers Endgame, the conclusion of the 10-year run of superhero Marvel comic superhero films woven together in a filmatic storyline. Endgame, this is a movie that did over $2 billion as of May 5th. Closing in on Avatar, which I believe is the highest grossing film in history. Is that right? Anybody can correct me on that?
No, that is. I think that is true.
Yeah. And I do think that they're going to make more money than Avatar. So we're here. All three of us have seen the film. Unlike the horror show we did.
Before the horror show, though, I gave you guys warning well in advance and said I was not going to see all those films. So,
yeah, you stuck to your word. So great.
That was fair.
The difference is I sacrificed myself for the brand. I threw myself on the grenade of non-art house cinema so that I could be here today.
Jay, you are the Captain America of Snobs on Film. Also, really quickly, for anybody listening, it's been over a month, I think, since Endgame was released. So I'm guessing there may be two, maybe three of you people out there who have not seen this film. So this is directed at you. This is a spoiler heavy conversation of Marvel Avengers Endgame and every other Marvel movie that's ever come out, and even some non-Marvel movies. So if you are spoiler sensitive, pause this, go watch those films, go watch Endgame, come back and listen to this review.
So I just want to get to it. I mean, this is... Put it all out there. I want to know if we're satisfied with the ending to this decade-long story. I want to know about overall reactions, favorite moments, intriguing moments, stuff you did like, stuff you didn't like, because I want to get into what the impact of the MCU is. So, let's start with Isaac, because I know you were camped out in a lawn chair outside the theater for a week, popcorn money ready.
And I'm sure this was the case around the country as far as, you know, our listeners probably had the same experience. But, you know, tickets were sold out, you know, that first weekend, unless you wanted to sit like basically so close to the screen that you were basically in the movie. Or
in some cities, if you wanted to see the movie at 3-4 in the morning.
Right. 3 in the morning, which my son did. Him and his boys went at 3 o'clock in the morning. I meant to ask him if they actually stayed awake through, because, you know, I don't care how interested you are in a film, 3 a.m., you know, you coming out, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning. That's rough. So, I got tickets to go see it that Monday. It came out that Friday. I saw it that Monday. Because, I wanted to be able to enjoy the movie without, you know, dealing with the crowds and the chaos, blah, blah, blah. So, but listen, I saw it Monday morning and it was almost sold out. You know, there's only a few seats left. So I don't know if everybody did what I did and took that morning off of work. I don't know what happened. But am I satisfied? Yes, I'm satisfied that they defied expectations as far as, you know, anytime you're doing the wrap up of anything, whether it be a trilogy, whether it be a series of books, whatever it is, it's always kind of like, people expect you to fail. It's almost like how many people get to stick that landing? You know, how many genres, how many series, how many trilogies, how many franchises have ever stuck that landing? We can name a few as far as film trilogies go, but then we can probably name more that didn't. Most recently, I felt was Chris Nolan's Batman. I don't think The Dark Knight Rises stuck the landing the way it should. I think they did give us a satisfying. Wrap up to these 21 films, I think it is now, over the course of total 10 years, 11 years, if you want to count Endgame and Captain Marvel. So, yeah, 11 years. I did have issues with the film. There are some things that I found lacking. I thought the pacing, for example, in the first hour or whatever, was kind of off. That said, let me first give a disclaimer.
My favorite part.
I actually like the first part too. Yeah.
Let me also give a disclaimer. I've only seen this film once. I tried to go again the other day, and I couldn't get the time because, you know, we're talking about a 3-hour movie. So I couldn't find the time. But this is a movie, when I walked out of it, I said to myself, you know, that was a lot of movie. You know, that was a lot of movie. And this is a movie in order to really dive into it and compare it to Infinity War, of course, which is the obvious comparison. But then to really kind of give a full assessment of it, I feel like you need to see this movie multiple times. That said, I did feel pound for pound, I think Infinity War is the better film. But Endgame, I was not dissatisfied at all. There were a lot of parts in it that I was like, wow, you know, I can't believe they pulled that off. There were some parts in it that I thought was kind of unexpected. The whole Thor storyline to me was unexpected, although I've seen that in the comics. Lebowski Thor has been in the comics. But I was surprised to see them go that route in the finale, you know, to take that chance with one of their biggest stars. So I thought that was gutsy and it paid off. There were some things that I found kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Inconsistencies.
There are some inconsistencies. My biggest one, of course, the biggest inconsistency I found was that Thor in Infinity War damn near kills Thanos with Stormbreaker. Full, you know, Infinity Gauntlet, you know, Infinity Stones on max Thanos, and still almost gets killed by Thor. But then in Endgame, Thor has both Stormbringer and Mjolnir, his hammer, and he, you know, almost he can't take down Thanos. So I just found it curious to see that. Yeah, Stormbreaker, he forged Stormbreaker for the sole purpose of killing Thanos. He calls it in Infinity War a Thanos killing weapon. And then when he goes and he forges Stormbreaker, the dwarf tells him, this is maybe the most powerful weapon I've ever forged. And we saw the devastation that he wrought with this thing in Infinity War when he lands and just starts taking apart, you know, Thanos's army single-handedly, ripping apart ships and all that other shit. So it just like, and again, he went up against Thanos with Thanos had all six stones and still couldn't stop Stormbreaker. So it was just kind of, and I know why the filmmakers did it, because they don't want to just show Thor, you know, fucking up Thanos for, you know, the last half of Endgame. It's like, what's everybody else going to do? They wanted to make Endgame Captain America's movie the same way Infinity War is really Thor's movie. So that's why we get the big scene with Cap, you know, picking up Mjolnir and, you know, beating the hell out of Thanos for about 5 seconds until Thanos turns the tables on him. So I get why they did it. But as a comic book head, those are the kind of things that you point at and say, oh, that's not, you know, that doesn't make sense, or why, blah, 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 you know, just debate stuff. So
let me ask you a question. As a comic book head, how consistent is the film, and speaking of Infinity War and Endgame, right? Does that play out in the comics?
Oh, well, this is a much longer discussion we can get into another time. But to make a long story short, what the MCU has done very well, in my opinion, is being able to cherry pick the elements from the comics that they want. So Infinity War in the comics, different than Infinity War in the movies, than in the MCU.
All right.
But the thing that the MCU has done, and I'll talk about this later, is they've stayed true to the overall ideology and tone of comic books without having to say, okay, every single element has to be played out within these. Civil War and MCU, much different than Civil War in the comics. So they've been able to do that well. I think ultimately answer your question, like I said, I do think that they did give us a satisfying ending. Despite nitpicks, I think they did a good job. And what they did, I'm going to quote someone else, a podcaster / host. Her name is Amy Dallin. She does a show on Collider called Heroes. She said, and I'm paraphrasing her a little bit, but she said what they did was they managed to make a sequel for 21 movies. And that's basically what they did. And Endgame is a sequel to 21 films, which hasn't been done before in cinematic history. So whether you love or hate it, you have to acknowledge the fact of how difficult a feat that was to pull off. And the fact that they did it in a 3-hour movie to most people's satisfaction, I think is something worth commending.
I never thought about it that way. And that's a really good point. One of the points that some cats were making in the barbershop was that whatever it is, again, like love or hate, you have to give them credit for being able to take as many characters as they use in this film, mm-hmm. in these films,
mm-hmm.
and somehow manage that they all have screen time, balance it all together, and all their individual plot lines, which, as you say, have had the root over 21 films to sort of come together and be resolved. It's quite impressive.
Let me ask you, Jay.
I have to give it that.
Being and I'm regarding you as the one least enthusiastic about these films among the three of us. Did you like it? Did you like Endgame?
Yeah, based on my expectations for the type of film, it was a fun watch, definitely. It, generally speaking, held my attention. There's a lot of good humor in them. I like those aspects very much. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I like the beginning to Endgame more than perhaps anything else that I've seen in the MCU, because a lot of the times with these movies, you very rarely saw the fallout from these battles. And one of the big criticisms that I know the DC universe, and perhaps even the MCU at times, has received from the public is that, mm-hmm. hang on, these buildings mm-hmm. are getting destroyed. How many thousands of people are being, you know, hurt in the clash, amongst the clash of these titans? I felt that the first, however long it was, of Endgame explored that. Like, this is the first time we're actually really seeing what that destruction looks like for humanity. And when you see the character, the Ant-Man character, he's the only person ostensibly on the planet who doesn't actually know what happened, because he wasn't here when it happened. And right. You know, he's a comedian.
I'm laughing because this whole thing kicks off because of a random rat that just happens to run across the dashboard of a van that's in a storage unit.
He's a comedic character, but you know, to give him a bit of dramatic weight at that point, which I think they did, when he's walking around, he's looking at the newspaper clippings, looking at the obituaries, those kind of stone lists of all the names, and he's trying to figure out, like, even ask that child cycling, you know, kid, what happened here?
No, right.
And it was, you know, you see the rubbish piled up, you see the, you know, those little details, civic authority has stopped working, etc. Houses are boarded up, some are completely derelict. What I liked was they didn't just proverbially turn the page mm-hmm. and start new and say, right, now, mm-hmm. next. It was really leading on from that. I dug that.
Yeah, and I agree with Jay as far as them showing the impact of that. But just to keep us from getting screamed at in the comments, Civil War was essentially about this. Captain America Civil War was about the human cost of all this destruction. And that's how the Sokovia Accords in Civil War came about, was because these governments were saying, look, you motherfuckers are flying all around the planet, you're destroying cities, this and that, you know, and people are dying. Robert Downey Jr.'s character, Tony Stark, gets approached by a woman.
Right.
She approaches him and says, listen, you know, my son was killed while you guys were in Sokovia, you know, tearing down, doing this, doing that. He had a building fall on him. Who speaks for him, basically? And that's what leads to the Sokovia Accords and leads to the split. And Tony Stark's camp is like, look, we need to police ourselves because, you know, there is human cost to what we're doing. And Captain America, kind of conversely to his role in the comics, is the maverick and is the one that says, no, we can't be police. We have to go where we need to go and do what we need to do. So, yeah, I agree with Jay's overall point, but just to make sure that we're being...
it's different.
Go ahead.
It's different. That's like an Alex Kittner's mother moment, right? Arthur, I know you know what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's right, Josh.
What I liked about Endgame is that it took it further, and it really showed, like, for what the everyday street is like. How has humanity as a whole, rather than just one person, one sort of token symbol, how has it moved on? Has it moved on?
You know? Yeah, I thought it was dope when they took the chance of saying 5 years later, you know, because
right.
That was like, okay, whatever else has happened in this new, whatever else happens in this new MCU moving forward in the next phase of films, this MCU has had 5 years of people being gone. You know what I'm saying?
It's like
that actually happened, you know, so... Let's say, you know, the next Doctor Strange movie, which I know is in development right now, there's going to be characters in there that may reference the fact that, yeah, for five years, my husband was gone or my wife was gone after the snap and I got remarried or I did this or I did, you know what I'm saying? It's like real, like mm-hmm. John is saying mm-hmm. real shit. And then to John's point, though, I think that was a great scene in Endgame when Ant-Man is walking around, you see what the streets look like. And I think it was also really...
Particularly because particularly because he's been the most non-serious comedic character in the entire franchise. But yeah, they give him the dramatic moment. You know, they give him the dramatic weight.
But I will say, I saw those same dramatic beats reflected in our actual heroes, specifically Black Widow. She became this kind of shut-in. You know, she was clearly depressed. She was shut in, and you saw that. You saw the trauma on her. You saw the trauma within Captain America, and of course, you saw the trauma in Thor. So I think what comic books have always done, and there's a not to get completely off topic, but very quickly, there was an article in New York Times this morning about these films, and then it had all their film critics and pop culture critics sitting around talking about it. But the article opens up with them basically saying, you know, hey, these comic book films have managed to take these themes and do this, this, and that. And they're pretending, they're acting almost as if there's something new. If you paid attention to comic books at all over the last several decades, especially with Marvel, you realize that one of the triumphs of comic book storytelling is that they take human emotions and put them into these larger than life situations. So this is nothing new, these themes. To see Thor depressed, you know, or see a person depressed, but that person happens to be the God of Thunder, you know, that's comic book storytelling. To see, as Arthur mentioned a minute ago, a rat is basically the reason that the world gets saved. You know what I'm saying? The chance that a rat just scurries this way instead of going that way, that's a comic book device. You know, that happens all the time in comic books, and it happens all the time in real life. Chance, you know, the random occurrence that leads to all these other things. So a lot of these themes that I saw taking place in Endgame, I think that it speaks to one of the primary reasons for the MCU's success is that Kevin Feige and his team and the Russo brothers and all the writers, Marcus and McFeely, all these people, what they've done is they've looked at comic books. They understand comic books, and they've seen these themes and these story devices, and they've just brought them to the big screen. They haven't reinvented the wheel. They've basically taken what the best things about comic books and put them on the silver screen.
Let me get my two cents in on here. I did like the period of the Vanishing, the 5-year period. It seemed to de-emphasize the fact that these people had superpowers. Even though I really don't know what Black Widow's superpower is, because she always shows up with this pistol. But I did like that period where Black Widow, you know, she takes this project management role because she is a shut-in. She's got to do something, even though she can't do anything. None of them can do anything. They can't bring, you know, at this point, they can't bring anybody back. They don't know where Thanos is. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do. I like that. Here's Steve Rogers, Captain America. He's got a vibranium shield, but he can't do anything. He's just now sitting talking to Black Widow, trying to get her out of her funk, you know, while they go and try to find Hawkeye, who's turned into just straight, you know, high-end vigilante. I think that it was a good opportunity for, you know, some real acting to take place. And I think that came through, most notably for me, was Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, who's married Pepper. Has a family, has a daughter, has moved on, and feels this great personal cost and responsibility, you know, for all of these things happening.
Now, very quickly, there's two things, though, that I thought was interesting that they kind of brought up early in the film, two thematic things they brought up early in the film, which they really didn't address later on. But if you're paying attention, they kind of put these seeds in your head. One was when Captain America, when Steve Rogers mentions to Black Widow, he says, you know, on my way over here across the Hudson, I saw that there's whales back in the Hudson. And it was kind of like a moment to say, remember Thanos said,
maybe Thanos was right.
Right. In order to save the planet, to the universe, we need to get rid of half of these motherfuckers. So I thought that was a very interesting moment, even though later on when Hulk does the snap, when Professor Hulk does the snap, and the first thing that you kind of notice is birds returning, you know, to the trees. So it was kind of like, you know, is Thanos right? Or is he wrong? So it was like the writers were throwing that little seed in to kind of spark debate about whether Thanos was right or wrong. That was interesting. The second thing was that on the political side, when Tony Stark shows back up, which, by the way, Downey Jr., when he shows back up and he's like, you know, all thin and just
emaciated. I mean,
that was excellent. Yeah. That was an excellent scene. Great acting. He says, because you're expecting them to have this warm reunion and it's all love,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
He goes off on Captain America like, motherfucker, I told you. Right. I told you this was going to happen. But I told you back in Age of Ultron that we needed to put a defense system around the Earth. But you were so worried about everybody's freedoms, and now half of those people are gone. Half of the living life in the entire universe, not just on Earth, the entire universe is gone.
And but the first thing that he says to Steve Rogers when they pull him off, because
I lost the kid.
Right. He says,
which
I
is
lost
just
the kid.
so brilliant, because
right.
in this, you know, in the Spider-Man Homecoming movie, you see this mentorship. Mm-hmm. And in Infinity War, you see him, you know, he takes Peter Parker under his wing. He's nurturing him. That's the son, you know.
Right. And even in
Civil War, when Cap and Spider-Man fight for the first time and Cap defeats Spider-Man, he's like, "You got a heart, kid, where are you from?" And they have that New York moment together,
mm-hmm.
even though they're on opposite sides. So, yeah, they do weave it in there that it's a special character to those two guys.
I think you can point to a lot of negatives that come out the fact that most of all comic book writing has been done by men, particularly white males. There's a lot of negatives to that because you don't get a lot of story that we should have gotten. I mean, we're just starting to get, because you're starting to get more and more female writers and people of color, so on and so forth. But one of the positives of having all these male writers is we've constantly got this father-son story. You know what I'm saying? And for men, particularly men who have kids, you always get hit with that, you know. So the whole Peter Parker, Tony Stark thing, to your point, Arthur. Yeah, every time they hit one of those story beats, as men and as fathers and as sons, it hits us in the heart.
Yeah,
and they know that. But just really quickly, yeah, to my point, those are the two points. The socio-political commentary that they threw up about, you know, the return of species to the Earth that had gotten pushed out by mankind. And then also, you know, Tony's kind of conservative viewpoint of protection and because keep in mind, Stark is his father made their billions off of manufacturing weapons. So he still has some of that in his DNA. Mm-hmm. So his viewpoint of, you know, weaponry and defense or aggression over freedoms. It was interesting to me that the writers threw that little nugget in there. And I thought that was it was a really good scene.
I need to transition into Marvel's dominance and the positive and negative aspects of that. Clearly, with the MCU, Marvel Studios has, you know, they've pulled this off, warts and all. They've been able to build, you know, a universe. And we've talked about how Isaac specifically has talked about how difficult it is, you know, to build a universe. We've seen it in Star Wars, the ups and downs of that. We've seen DC try several times to get their universe built. Universal Studios has tried to do monster movies and build some kind of universe and hooks into those storylines, and it doesn't always work. To me, this is a one and done. I do think that 21 years and
one and done, Arthur, you mean they can't, you think that this is unachievable twice now?
I think this is unachievable twice.
Unachievable for a different company or for Marvel even?
Even for Marvel, because they tied off a ton of stuff. I think it's easier for Marvel to build on what they've done because they've clearly laid the foundation and they've got the stories. They still have stories to tell
as well.
You know, and even, you know, with the 5 years that we just talked about, yes, but even without that, I mean, for example, a lot of situations that happen with Spider-Man are very localized. Spider-Man isn't normally flying off in space, you know what I mean? But who's got 20 years worth of stories to be able to, or hell, who's got 10 years of stories, 5 years of stories to be able to start rebuilding something like this?
I mean, Isaac is probably best placed to answer that, but we're talking about, what, 60, 70 years worth of comics?
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming that they've still got a huge amount of established and you know, beloved source material from which to draw. Is that correct?
I agree. And maybe the X-Men is really the elephant in the room. But not every Marvel character is going to work as a standalone film.
Right. So to your point, Arthur, I think that there's been failures. There's been, you know, the Fantastic Four, Hulk really had two solo movies. Only one of them did moderately well, which was an MCU film. So there's been failures. But I think two things. One, 5 years ago, I think everybody wanted to emulate what the MCU was doing. Now in 2019, I think that movie companies have learned to some degree, this shit is really fucking hard. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That what they're doing is extraordinarily hard and we shouldn't try to emulate that. Now, what you're seeing is a little bit of a diversity. You saw Sony last year released Venom. Okay. They still have, they own Venom. They own those mm-hmm. characters. They own Spider-Man. They're just leasing him out to the MCU. Mm-hmm. So they released Venom without Spider-Man. It did very well. I have not seen Full Disclaimer.
It did very well commercially.
It did very well commercially. Critics hated it, but it did very well commercially. So there's going to be a sequel. Now, are they creating their own type of, you know, spider universe over there? I don't know. Also, you saw Into the Spider-Verse released last year by Sony, which right. did very well critically and did reasonably well financially.
It won Oscar for Best Animated Feature.
Right. So and it was one of my favorite movies of last year. Maybe even I may have even enjoyed it more than Infinity War. I'm not sure. But what you're seeing is studios saying we can't emulate that Marvel model. You know, that's unique. They've done that. What I'm hoping for within the superhero genre, what I'm hoping for is seeing more diversity, which is why I'm excited about the Joker movie that's coming out later this year from DC Films. DCEU or DCU, whatever you want to call it, they've largely come to accept that they effed that up. You know, they had their mm-hmm. shot and they didn't handle it well. So now they're saying they're doing like standalone films. This Joker film, if you've seen the trailer, you can see it kind of takes place in what in comics terms is termed as an Elseworld. In other words, there's no continuity there. It doesn't have to take place in any particular storyline or arc. It's a standalone. And I'm excited about it because it's a different kind of path to take other than doing exactly what Marvel is doing. So that's one side of the argument. The other side, the impact that the MCU has had on cinema as a whole is a little bit worrisome to me, a little bit troublesome to me, because mm-hmm. when Endgame came out last weekend, and, you know, to be clear, Endgame as a Marvel movie is unique in and of itself. It's not like every movie Marvel drops, the MCU drops, is the cap off to 21 other films. So it was a unique film. But when it was dropped, there's theaters that showed this joint 24 hours. Didn't show, yeah. There's some theaters didn't show any other films that weekend. It was just all Endgame.
Yeah. Right.
And that is a little bit like, that's troublesome.
I get why you're saying that that's a concern. No other movie, like basically every other movie that's been released is just shut out for, you
they
know,
are basically the Thanos of filmmaking at
yeah.
the moment. Right?
Yeah.
They're the Michael Jackson, dude.
I mean, remember that's videos. What I'm saying. We've seen that. I mean, we've seen that in music. We've seen that in music.
I don't see widespread emulation of the MCU. I feel like everybody else has kind of gotten the point now. Like, okay, that's very unique to what they do. Let's not try that shit. Again, 5 years ago, I think it was the exact opposite. I think everybody wanted to do it. Star mm-hmm. Wars, Lucasfilm right now is struggling because they almost have to do something episodic. Everything they do is canon. So it's like, how are we going to not do, you know,
we
try to
diversify.
We try to standalones, and that's not. So now what they're doing, they're moving to television, you know, The Mandalorian, The Return of the Clone Wars. So they're trying different things there. So I don't see that as a problem. What I do see is, you know, this is the new Western, you know, this is the new genre that's kind of dominating things. Can we make mm-hmm. other films that can make $1 billion that aren't like this? And right now, I think the answer is no. This is, you know, in the 80s, action films made the most money. Right now, it's the superhero films that are making the most money. As a moviegoer, what I would like to see is the chance to go see Endgame on Saturday and then go see something completely different on Sunday. I don't want to get to a point where when every time a superhero movie drops, it completely takes over cinemas. That would be horrible.
I'm all over that, bro. But to be very fair, it's not like cinemas, particularly multiplexes, which is what we're talking about here, right? It's not like they're showing a broad range of film anyway. It's
you mean Hitchcock films, they're coming out in the next year, right?
Honestly, if you know, if a XYZ action, if John Wick 3 suffers because of Endgame, I'm not going to lose any sleep.
Mm-hmm.
If Beale Street Could Talk, it suffered because of Endgame, then I would. But if Beale Street Could Talk and dramas of that nature, smaller films, more independent films, they're suffering anyway because of the other films that I've mentioned, because of your garden variety action movie, or mm-hmm. your garden variety slapstick comedy, or your basic garden variety horror film.
Yeah, agree.
And really, Endgame is just the gateway to the summer movie season. Disney's going to have a great summer. Shit, they've got Lion King, live action Lion King, live action Aladdin coming out in the summer. Ugh,
those trailers look horrible. I'm sorry, go ahead. Side note.
Aladdin trailer, Will Smith isn't blue, so it looks a little bit better. Yeah, I thought he was blue through the whole thing.
There's just some films that do not need live action. I'm gonna be honest with you, The Lion King doesn't look good to me either. It looks like National Geographic, but the animals are talking, and that's really freaky.
This is gonna do pretty well.
Are we talking about, and maybe this is too much of a tangent, but is this about superhero movies taking over the cinema world, or is this about Disney taking over the cinema world? Because I did read a statistic, and hold on one second, and I'll get it right. Okay, so in 2008, when Iron Man, the first MCU movie opened, Disney had 10.5% of the domestic box office, American domestic box office. Mm-hmm. Now it's at 26% in 2018. Mm-hmm. That's an enormous jump. That's more than twice. So I think there is an argument to be made that, yeah, this is getting a little bit looking like a monopoly, especially with Disney just acquiring 20th Century Fox. Now, before, yeah. I know Jay has a point, but very quickly, Arthur, you kind of alluded to the fact that can the MCU do this again? Another 10-year run of films that culminates in this huge epic thing. Absolutely. I think absolutely they can do it. All Endgame was the big giant annual that comes out every year for comic books. And there was actually frames within that movie that look like double page spreads of a comic book, especially the end shot.
Yeah.
One of the penultimate scenes when they're showing Tony Stark's funeral and they show all these characters. It was basically it was a spread in a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
So my prediction is that the next phase of the MCU is going to deal with the mutant problem. You're going to see mutants. Excuse me. You're going to see mutants introduced into the MCU.
You're talking about a reboot of X-Men, basically.
A reboot. I would say introduction. I think they're going to do it. Kevin Feige has proven that one thing they're good at is not necessarily defying expectations, but kind of going in a way that surprises you. And I think that instead of focusing on Wolverine, for example, and showing him, pop up in an end credit scene in Spider-Man or some shit, I think what they're going to focus on is the mutant problem. They're going to look at the MCU and say, okay, look at where we are right now with all these heroes being introduced, the 5-year thing where people just disappeared. How freaked out is the populace of the world right now? And then all of a sudden you hear about a baby who was born somewhere and, turned 13, hit puberty, and all of a sudden could levitate his house. It's like what happens when people are born with superpowers, and then the kind of the paranoia that comes out of that. They're going to dive into all of those things that Chris Claremont and John Byrne and all these guys got into in the late 70s and early 80s that made the X-Men the number one Marvel comic that it became, and one of my favorite comics as a kid. I think that's what the next phase of the MCU is going to be about. And I think that'll culminate into a 10-year storyline, just like this last phase is done. And I think, Arthur, to kind of push back on your pessimism about it, I think that, again, Kevin Feige and the MCU have proven that, listen, we're not just going to keep repeating ourselves, even though people who don't like comic book films, all these things kind of look the same to them. But for those of us who do love these films, we've constantly been engaged because we're getting different things in each film.
Even though these aren't my favorite type of movies, Disney has always, and when I'm talking about Disney, I'm talking about Disney that we all know and love, the classic Disney, the animated movies.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been expert at one thing: adults bringing their children to the movies and adults wanting to see the movie as much as the child, because there would be jokes that the older people got in every single animated Disney movie that the kids wouldn't have got, and vice versa, right? Through the MCU, Kevin Feige has actually managed to maintain that aesthetic, because the things that some people were laughing at are different to the things that other people are laughing at. Like any film, for sure. But I think with the Disney movies, it's more pronounced. It's almost like we're putting this in there for these guys, for the comic book heads. We're putting this in there for the people who don't really want to be here, but, you know, are here and they might as well enjoy it. They might as well get some good dialogue. They might as well get some pathos. They might as well get some comedy, etc. And I feel that I don't think that their competition does that well at all. I think that if you go and see a Denzel Washington action movie, that's what you get. And if you don't like that, then you don't like that. There's not going to be much in there apart from that one purpose. But Marvel seemed to be very good, or, you know, or a horror film. If you go and see, I don't know, The Conjuring or whatever, there's not going to be little things in there for people who don't like horror. Marvel under Disney seemed to do that beautifully. My point is, I'd rather a company like that was dominating than one of these other companies.
Right. I mean, you know, there's been plenty of comic book films done by people who clearly don't really understand comic books, or didn't, you know, do the homework or put in their time. But clearly the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, has done that. And if you look at Endgame, the moment that Hulk shows up, Professor Hulk, as he's known in the comics, you like, oh shit, these cats really went there. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, who, that storyline of Professor Hulk is, you know, it's not known to the common populace, you know, and they explained it in the movie well enough to where you accepted it. But if you're a comic book head, you got a whole nother thing out of it. When Cap picks up the hammer, picks up Mjolnir, you saw that coming as a comic book fan because you've seen it in the comics. But at the same time, to see it on the big screen, it's like, man, these are moments that I never thought I would see, you know, in a film, in a movie. You know, I never thought these things would happen. So this is a really, for comic book heads, yeah, it is a whole lot of excitement and kind of payoff, you know, that you want. And to contrast it with what Lucasfilm is doing right now, this is one of the biggest criticisms of The Last Jedi. There wasn't payoff. You know, there wasn't that feeling of, oh, I've got what I've been waiting for, you know, decades. I've been able to see it. There wasn't payoff. And I think that's what the MCU does very well.
But yeah, easier for them though, Isaac, right?
You talking about in relation to Lucasfilm?
They've got,
yeah, they're easier in the sense, no, that, yeah, they have a lot of the material
to draw from.
But to be fair, Lucasfilm handicapped themselves because they had a whole lot of stuff, the legend stuff, Arthur, that they decided, hey, we're not going to call this canon anymore. There's too much shit. So we're going to cut this. When Disney bought Lucasfilm, they came out and said, listen, all this stuff is now called legends and it's not canon. And here are the things that are canon. So there's a lot of things that happen in those 20 or 30 years or whatever to these characters that are no longer canon. So they can't draw on that anymore. But yeah, John, to your point, Marvel is both has an advantage because, yeah, they have a lot of things to pull from. And also the MCU is not does not need to adhere to the comic books. There's thing, they don't need to say, okay, now that this happened in the MCU, it also happened in the comic books or vice versa. Those things are not related. They're not connected. So they have more freedoms to explore and to cherry pick what the stories that they want to tell.
So let me bring up something here. And that's the idea of people getting tired of comics, maybe even getting tired of the fantasy genre altogether. You figure since 2000, we've been inundated with fantasy stories, the Harry Potter 7 film franchise, the Lord of the Rings, 3 movies dedicated to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, 1 movie per book, 3 unnecessarily movies, in my opinion, dedicated to The Hobbit. We've gotten through Game of Thrones on the small screen. We just got through talking about the MCU. Is this a point where people are getting tired of this format? I mean, we even see Disney now retelling their stories in a live action context. Dumbo, which was totally hyped up, is considered a failure at the box office. Like the live action Dumbo that came out in March, and now we're going to get 2 more live action movies, Aladdin and The Lion King. Our audience is getting to the point where, you know, enough is enough. I mean, Jahan alluded to Disney always being able to count on parents bringing their children. Those movies, really, especially in the 90s, in the early 90s, were a problem. Disney cartoons were a problem. Hercules was a problem, for example, a big problem. Brother Bear was a big problem. But it wasn't until Pixar and the deal, the partnership with Pixar, that that really picked back up. And now we're staring down, what, Toy Story 4? That nobody, I don't think, really asked for. I think it's like, okay, are we getting tired of these fantasy concepts?
This is nothing to do with the quality of the movies or what I perceive. I think it's just the nature of art and entertainment that, sure, you have classics that stand the test of time, but in terms of a general popular audience, nothing lasts forever. Whether it's music or literature or film, there are things which are in fashion and de rigueur, and then they move out. And often they don't move out until we're presented with something else that's new. Often we think, yeah, this is great, and we're into it. And it's only when something brand new that we didn't expect comes across our field of vision that we think, oh, okay, this is what's hot now. And it's in contrast to that that the other things start to fade away in terms of interest. So I don't really have a intelligent point or insightful point, just one that I think is just the nature of audiences and how things progress, but nothing lasts forever.
What I would like to see in the future is for superhero movies to get put in the same realm, or comic book films, more to the point, to be in the same realm of comedies or dramas or whatever, where if a drama comes out and it sucks, nobody is like, you know what, we should just stop making dramatic films. You know, people are tired of drama. Or if a comedy comes out and it sucks, people are like,
they don't indict the whole genre.
Right. It's like, people don't say, you know what, let's never make another comedy. People are tired of laughing. Let's move on. You know, I think that if I were in a meeting with Kevin Feige and Marvel, I would say, listen, we are in a position to, within 10 years from now, we can help steward this thing to the point where it gets to a level where we can stop having this conversation about superhero fatigue, or have we had enough of these films, blah, blah, blah. I think Marvel is in a unique position to do that because they have the ability to make such a wide array of films. They don't have to do $100 million blockbusters every time. They can make a $15 million film. I would love for them to do a Daredevil movie that's, you know, $50 million or less. I would love to see these things to a degree, and really not even to a degree. We've actually seen this in the Netflix Marvel shows, particularly Jessica Jones and Daredevil. So I think that there is a point, because Jessica Jones, just looking at that in particular, yeah, it's a comic book film. It's a superhero thing. I'm talking about season one. Not season two, but season one. It is like 10 things before it gets to being about a superhero. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's about so many other things before you get to that point. So I would like to see the superhero genre, the comic book genre, get to that point. And I think that's, Marvel can help usher that in, but then other studios are going to have to look at comic book properties, which I think they're starting to do, because a lot of comic books have characters who have absolutely no superpowers. They're not involved in big battles. It's just panel after panel of people talking, you know, that have, if you go to a comic book store, you find these comics. So they're going to have to look at these other, this quote unquote source material, and start saying, what else can we pull from this genre that people want to see? And that's what I would want to see in the future. Real quick, before we continue, I think that we should take a moment and just give a little shout out and encourage people to go check out our sister podcast, The Music Snobs. Current episode right now is titled, Are You a Stan? So if you are a Stan, if you are standing for something, this is an episode that you definitely want to check out. If you don't think you're a Stan, you probably are a Stan anyway, and you probably need to check this episode out.
and be warned.
It enumerates your symptoms.
Right. It'll show you how delusional you are. But as always, this it's a great episode. So we encourage you to go check out The Music Snobs. You can find us at The Music Snobs on IG, and Total Music Snobs on Twitter, musicsnobs.com. On Spotify, iTunes, and we definitely encourage you on iTunes to leave reviews and ratings. It really helps us out, both for Snobs on Film and The Music Snobs. So please go on iTunes and leave a 5-star rating on that service.
All right. Roundtable. Our roundtable segment. One question, three answers. We're calling this one, Everybody Needs a Hero. What comic book film would you recommend to someone who otherwise is not interested in seeing a comic book film. Maybe they're not interested in comics. They've had a preconceived notion. You know, they had a bad experience with the film in some kind of way. They're just not
into it. Had a bad experience. What? How do you have a bad experience with a film? Like what actually could happen?
It could be that somebody went to see, you know, Superman Returns.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if that was your first
done.
Comic book
and
movie,
they're done.
And
they're not going back.
I ain't mad at you. If that was your first comic book movie, I'm not mad at you because I almost walked out of that myself.
I'll go first because I actually had a situation like this last night. As a matter of fact, and it wasn't somebody that necessarily hated comic book films, but you know there was a thing where it's like it's a kiddie movie or they're just not into that.
Mm.
But I would actually recommend the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Good pick.
I think that it serves as a standalone movie, yet it's connected to the MCU. In the film, you actually are introduced to all of the Infinity Stones, not necessarily by showing them, but it's explained what the Infinity Stones are, why they're so powerful. It gives some great comedic elements to it. It's got a really good cast. Chris Pratt, Bradley Cooper voices Rocket, who's probably my favorite Guardian, like one of my favorite MCU characters, actually.
Is that Bradley Cooper? Wow.
Yeah, that's Bradley Cooper. Vin Diesel, who grunts his way through it as the tree-like figure Groot. It's more of an adult-oriented
Arthur,
film.
Let me ask you though: Would you recommend? What if the person, I don't know who this was, you were in a conversation with last night, but if they were like, I hate comic book movies and I hate space travel or space fantasy, do you think that Guardians is still strong enough as a film that you would still recommend it to this person?
Yeah, I would, because there is a kind of a Star Wars-esque space element to it, where space isn't just, you know, all pretty and ethereal. You know, it's kind of gritty, and it's this sort of a quote-unquote reality aspect to these different worlds and how these characters get together. But gives you enough backstory. It gives you enough running room to say, okay, I'll try an Avengers movie, or maybe I'll try, you know, a Captain America movie or something like that, because, you know, you're introduced to this Thanos and, you know, maybe you saw, like in this case of this person, maybe this person saw, you know, Thanos or Robert Downey Jr. on The View. You know, it doesn't require you to have backstory to watch Guardians of the Galaxy.
I love your pick. I just think that, you know, I'm wondering how hard, because I was thinking Doctor Strange when you were describing it. I was like, man, Doctor Strange is not a comedy at all, but also has some very strong thematic qualities that I think anybody could kind of jump on board mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. But it gets kind of out there too. So yeah, but I mean, I love your pick. I love your pick.
Okay. So, I guess my pick is, I got two. I got one completely fake one and then one that is my pick. So, my pick is based on a graphic novel by DC Comics in the late 80s, I think, called Watchmen. And it was made into a movie in 2009. You have a bunch of superheroes who are called the Watchmen, or Crime Busters in the original comic, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Some of them have passed their prime, and the political climate of the day is starting to be anti-superhero, seeing them as basically vigilantes. Isaac, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, by the way. With that turning of the tide, you start to see a split between them. Some of them think being a vigilante is necessary. Some of them want to placate the government and hang it up, I guess. What I liked about it is that it takes that same material that's featured in both films and gives it much more of a kind of noir feel. It's very murky, it's very dark. It's got quite a sort of depressive atmosphere, almost, you know, not unlike the David Fincher movie Seven. Much of it was drama. I thought much of it was quite sensitive. I thought much of it was quite thrilling, even though it features a whole bunch of characters to whom we've been introduced for the very first time. or to him, the general public, if you haven't read the comic book, if you haven't read the graphic novel, you're being introduced to them for the very first time, unlike Avengers Endgame, where you've seen them in ostensibly 10 to 20 other movies. And yet they still created a very strong personality for each of them and an individual story arc for most of them that was very interesting. And I think that you as the audience member would be invested in them. That's my main pick for those reasons.
Yeah, for me, I don't know if that wasn't, you know, Watchmen wasn't my film pick, but I will say that for people, some of my more literary friends who look down or don't necessarily respect comics in the way that I think they should, a lot of Alan Moore's work, especially Watchmen and Frank Miller's Dark Knight and Electro Assassin and some of his other work, those are the books that I recommend that they read. And if you've seen Watchmen, the film, which is in some ways very faithful to the comic, I would highly recommend that you read the comic, even if you're not a comic book reader.
Yeah, agreed.
That you read the Watchmen. You can find it anywhere. Agreed. You can probably find it at a gas station now because it's so ubiquitous. But also, those Watchmen, some of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, some of his work there. And then, like I said, a lot of the Frank Miller, particularly Dark Knight Returns and Electra Assassin, but I know this isn't snobs on comics or snobs on literature. So good pick, though.
I mean, no, it's interesting that you mentioned Frank Miller, because my other idea, my other real idea, which Watchmen beat out slightly, was Sin City.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because again, I think that is, you know, it's based on comic books, but it is a very adult film with very adult themes. But what I guess what the reason that Watchmen beat it out for me is that there's a very strong ethical dilemma that runs through the film that the characters experience. Some of the main characters experience this very strong ethical dilemma of should they use their power, shouldn't they use their powers? What, you know, is what they're doing right? Is it necessary? And yeah, I dug that a lot. My fake pick is actually a movie that hasn't been made yet, but I swear should have been made by now. There is actually an animated version that I haven't seen, and I heard it had mixed to positive reviews. But it would be the movie version of my favorite comic book ever, or my favorite graphic novel ever, Batman Year One.
Mm. Yeah, fantastic. That's a fantastic series.
It's by Frank Miller, and I'm probably going to pronounce it badly, but David Mazzucchelli.
That's good. Dave Mazzucchelli.
And what I very much like about it, it's kind of the movie that I wanted Batman Begins to be. It features Batman starting out for the very first time, hitting the streets and being a vigilante for the very first time. But it shows him as occasionally weak, occasionally vulnerable, occasionally disorganized, unstrategic, untactical. When he first goes out, he goes out in jeans, a leather jacket, and a black skull cap. He gets drawn into a fight with a pimp. He gets his ass kicked by that pimp's dominatrix and
Selina Kyle.
Friend, Selina Kyle. They show him get arrested by cops. They show him break free of the cops, but at personal cost to those cops, at physical damage and physical injury to him. And he literally crawls back to Wayne Manor to the Batcave with his tail between his legs and has to nurse his wounds. And then he goes out and then he's faster and then he's stronger and he's better. And he comes up with the idea that he needs a costume. He needs a symbol, an image to strike fear into the heart of all these guys. But for me, it dealt with that progression in a much less fantastic and much more down-to-earth, real way. And, you know, consistent with all my preferences that I've voiced on this show, I guess that reality, even though this is fantastic stuff, taking it and rooting it in some kind of reality, giving it at least a veneer or a perspective of reality, I think is very valuable. And I would have loved to have seen that depicted on film.
Well, I agree with you 100%. That's, you know, and for anybody listening, I think that if you want to read Batman Year One, Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli, read it and then quickly follow it with Daredevil Born Again, done by Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli. But I would say, though, just to kind of agree and push back on you a little bit, Jay, I think that Batman Begins, the largest inspiration for Batman Begins, comes from Batman Year One. I mean, there's there's a few panels that you could, you know, compare to scenes in Nolan's Batman Begins that clearly come strictly, or, you know, the scenes come directly from those panels.
It sure does. It sure does. But to me, they missed out the most valuable section of Batman Year One, which is his very first foray into vigilantism and how he completely screws it up. And how he goes out just like a regular guy.
Yeah, they shortened it and showed him approaching Gordon and then barely getting away. That's right. He jumps across that fire escape and just lands like in a really awkward position and body is. great pick. So what I did, though, I approached it from a viewpoint of, since this person who I'm supposedly making this recommendation to hates comic book films, I have nothing to lose. So I went all in and went to an animated film. This movie came out in 1993. So we're talking, this wildly predates any of this MCU stuff or the current kind of golden age that we're in as far as comic book films are concerned. A few years after Tim Burton had made, had successes with the first Batman film and the second Batman film, which came out in 92, I believe. But yeah, so this film, this animated feature came out in 1993, didn't do that well at the box office, became a hit and became successful once it was released on VHS, not DVD, afterwards, and developed a cult following. And the movie is Batman Mask of the Phantasm. So I don't know if either one of you guys has seen this. This is a film.
I have not.
So obviously it's a Batman story. It comes a year after the Batman the Animated Series hit television. Batman the Animated Series was a success. It even was aired in primetime for a while on Sunday nights from 92 to early 93. And it was a success. It had a very adult theme feel to it. It was a film noir, or, you know, it had kind of an Art Deco noir style to it. So it appealed to people outside of the comic book universe. So based on the success of that, DC wanted to do a movie. And so the creators, notably Bruce Timm and Paul Dini and what's the other guy's name? Eric. I'm looking at his name. Eric Radomski. These guys who created the animated series were tasked with creating a film. So what they came up with was a movie that essentially, as a Batman story, really works as a mob movie, a mystery, and primarily, in my opinion, it's a love story. And we don't get a lot of Batman love stories. But not to give anything away, because I want people to go and see this film. You can get it on Blu-ray now, and I believe it's also available on DC streaming service. So not to give anything away, but essentially Batman, it begins at the point when Bruce Wayne has done all of this training and he's ready to begin his career as a vigilante. Right before that happens, though, he meets somebody. And he falls in love with this woman, and he realizes that he has a chance at a normal life. He has a chance to be happy. So what is he going to do? Is he going to follow the path of happiness and give up this whole quest of seeking vengeance for the death of his parents? Or is he just going to say no to happiness, no to this woman, no to everything that she's offering him, and follow the path that he's been training for the last, 10 years? And so the results of that play out, and then we get the rest of the movie, and we see the consequences of his choices. We see the consequences of the woman's choices. A woman, her name is Andrea Beaumont in the movie. We see the results of her choices. And then if that wasn't enough, they introduce Joker into this movie, played by Mark Hamill, voiced by Mark Hamill, who did him on the animated series. If you've never watched the animated series or never heard Mark Hamill voice the Joker, you are missing out. It's one of the greatest voice performances. Yeah, it's one of the greatest voice performances ever. Mark Hamill, aka Luke Skywalker, doing the Joker is classic. So Joker is a part of this movie, but Joker, the reason why I would recommend this to somebody is because it's not a comic book film in the sense that, okay, Joker is the main antagonist and he takes over the film. The story, even with the Joker involved, is still about Batman's relationship and the choices that he made based on the love affair or the romance he had with this woman who he was considering marrying or proposed to. And so it works on a lot of levels, and visually it incorporates all those things that made the animated series great. The film noir aspect, the art deco, the kind of timelessness. So it's like you can tell it's taking place in modern 1993, but then there's allusions to things of the past. The cars look like they came out of the 1940s. The aircraft, you know, just all these little set design pieces that kind of leave you wondering exactly when this takes place. But it all feels cohesive and creates a very noirish type atmosphere. So it's one of the greatest, I think, performances that I've seen of Batman, who was voiced by Kevin Conroy from the animated series, is one of the greatest Joker performances. And it introduces some new characters. There's a mob boss played by Abe Vigoda. So it's like if you saw Abe Vigoda in The Godfather.
Tessio.
So he played Tessio in The Godfather, and he almost reprises that role in this movie, playing a mobster named Salvatore Valestra. So yeah, there's a lot of great voice performances here, but overall I think anybody who can connect to a love story or can connect to human drama can kind of put their distaste for superhero things aside or comic book elements aside and enjoy this film. I went to go see this movie. I'll never forget. This movie came out on Christmas Day of 1993. I never forget. There's a love story, by the way, the movie. So I go see this. I was set to go see this movie with the young lady I was dating at the time. We get into a big argument, right? Me keeping my priorities straight, I go see the movie anyway. Saying because I'm going to see
on
this
your,
film.
On your own.
On my own. Go see the film. We had a snowstorm that day. I remember
on Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day. Christmas afternoon.
You left
absolutely.
Her on Christmas Day.
Absolutely. I'm dead. Listen. You think you're a comic book head. I'm talking to these people out here. Think you're a comic book head. I'm a comic book head. But anyway, I may be getting some things mixed up. I'm sure that this went all a lot smoother and I was much nicer than I'm portraying myself now. But I remember it was Christmas Day. There was a snowstorm. I think maybe the fight happened the night before. I can't remember. But I remember I was supposed to go with someone, didn't. Ended up going by myself and was like, wow, that's one of the best films I've seen in such a long time. And I got the VHS as soon as it came out and saw it a million times afterwards. But I really feel like it's a movie that if you are not into comic book films,
wait,
this is a film that you will enjoy.
Wait, is that the story? I thought you were going to say, like, I went to the film, I saw the love story. It made me realize, yo, bro, this is whack. Mm-hmm. I called the girl. I said, I'm so sorry. Let's make this work.
day ended up well. Started off bad, ended up well. That's the power of comic book films.
All right. Cool.
All right. That's a full lid on Snobs on Film. We invite you to subscribe wherever you receive fine podcasts. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We are available on Spotify, on Stitcher, in your favorite podcast aggregator. We can be found on Instagram at Snobs on Film. Our Twitter handle is also Snobs on Film.
If you guys saw, but when all those heroes came back at the end of Endgame, there were so many heroes thrown in there, just, you know, that you had to freeze frame to see. So online I saw Howard the Duck was in there. He was
oh really? Yeah, I saw that.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, what happens on Disney Plus now with so WandaVision, terrible name, but it's about Scarlet Witch and Vision. They got a series. So how does she put Vision back together? And then you got Bucky and
Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
So we get to see, you know, Falcon at the end. One of the scene I hated when he was just so happy when Captain America said, "Here, you can be now Captain America." And he's like, "Really?" And then hey, Arthur. Then he had to look to Bucky to get permission. Like, should I take it?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I wanted T'Challa just appear out of nowhere and slap the shit out of him. Like, so
T'Challa, I wanted Killmonger to come out. Nigga!